You're listening to an iHeart podcast.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Wow, the more he and his attorneys talk, the more I like it. Of course, I'm talking about Alex Murdaugh. Why do his attorneys keep talking? Remember, Alex Murdaugh is the lawyer out of South Carolina that is now charged in the heinous murder of his wife, Maggie, and son, Paul, outside their hunting lodge out in the country, in addition to their home. I don't know how many properties they own, but one is definitely a murder scene now. He's also charged with millions of dollars of embezzling and fraud, taking money from clients he represented in the worst way, embezzling money from his law firm. Hey, I also think somebody had to know about all the embezzlement and did nothing. His family had a grip on South Carolina politics forever. The prosecutor's office had been held by a Murdaugh for 100 years. Now, talk about an ethical violation. He's a prosecutor in cases, but then would civilly represent, I guess, either the defendant or the victim in the case. That is a conflict of interest. What a big mess. But I'm more worried about the two dead bodies. Of course, the Murdaugh family is connected to a lot of dead bodies. There's Gloria Satterfield, the 50-ish-year-old housekeeper that was found dead at the Murdaugh estate, reportedly by, quote, tripping over the dog. Right. Then there is Mallory Beach, the teen girl that was thrown off the Murdaugh boat when one of the sons was drunk and high as a kite, piled into some pilings at a bridge. She flies off and floats in the water for 3 days before her body is found. Let's see, who else? Oh, yes. A young guy in the community was found dead of a seeming hit and run with ties to the Murdaugh family, and many argue it was no such thing of a hit as a hit and run. But let's focus on this case. Wife Maggie and son Paul, both killed at Murdaugh's South Carolina home. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Thank you for being with us here on Fox Nation and Sirius XM 111. The very latest. Lawyers for Murdaugh are now pointing the finger at the prosecutors, claiming they're hiding evidence, including blood spatter evidence and phone records, and they're accusing the prosecutors of leaking information about the murders to the press.
Take a listen to this.
They charged him with murder. What they're telling us today is they're still investigating it. They're still investigating the murder. They didn't have enough when they charged him. Again, Your Honor, this is some sort of game that's going on. He used the word game. That's not my word. This is not a game. It's his life. It's justice. It's the quality of justice in this courtroom, in this state, and it ain't a game.
Well, leaks have been around as long as I have been a prosecutor. There's always been leaks. Is that a violation of the law? Is that a crime? Probably not. And let me tell you something about blood spatter evidence. There is a time period in which the state has to hand over scientific evidence. That can be blood evidence, the analysis of drugs, fiber evidence, ballistics evidence, DNA evidence. Not polygraph, because you usually don't have that in a criminal trial. All of those are deemed scientific evidence. The state, under the law, has to hand all the scientific evidence over to the defense well in advance of trial. And they should. The reason is so the defense can prepare their defense based on the evidence the state has. Or they may even want to hire their own experts to analyze what the state experts have done or to do their own tests. We see that a lot where defense teams hire their own experts.
Take a listen to our friends at GMA. Good morning, America.
Alec Murdoch's legal team accusing prosecutors of hiding the ball, allegedly withholding evidence ahead of his looming trial for double murder.
Gotcha, prosecution. It's trial by ambush. Give us the stuff. I don't have a shred of paper. I don't have an email. I don't have an exhibit. I don't have any evidence.
His attorneys are now accusing investigators of leaking details to the media instead of handing it over to the defense as required.
What evidence are they talking about? Blood spatter evidence and phone records? Listen, we're not going to trial in the next 2 weeks, so the state has plenty of time to hand this evidence over. Take a listen to Good Morning America.
Murdoch's lawyer seemingly referencing reports about blood splatters and evidence found on phones.
We're ready to work. Ready to hire investigators, ready to hire experts. All I know about blood splatter is what I read in some blog. I've never seen any blood splatter evidence. I've never seen any phone downloads. I've never seen any witness statements. 32 days after we make the request, we still don't have anything.
The defense has filed a motion asking the judge to compel the state to turn over the evidence immediately and to unseal the details of the grand jury indictment. In a response filing, the state calls the motion a blatant attempt to create drama where formerly there was none.
There is a time period in which the state must hand over scientific evidence, a witness list, and much more, including exculpatory evidence. Exculpatory evidence is evidence that indicates the defendant could be innocent. That comes from a very old case that went to the U.S. Supreme Court, Brady v. Maryland, where Brady claimed the state did not hand over exculpatory evidence, and he won because the state did not hand over the exculpatory evidence. Back to Murdoch. Now, so far, the state has missed no deadlines in handing over evidence that we know of, but the blood spatter evidence I think they're talking about is high-impact human matter spatter, which is probably blood, found on Alex Murdoch's clothing that he wore the night of the murders, which indicates he was there when the gunshots occurred. That's the only way you can get that high-velocity, high-impact blood spatter. That's the spatter I think they're talking about. How did the whole thing start? Spatter evidence. Does it directly link the drugged up lawyer, Alex Murdoch, to the double murders of his wife and his own son? All this from a source, Fit News, and I want to go straight out to Matt Harris. Matt, the morning show host of the Matt and Ramona Show, 107.9 WLNK podcast, The Murdoch Family Murders. Matt, what is happening?
Well, according to Fitz News, they're the ones who reported this, that there's forensic evidence on his clothing, and it could have only have come from blood spatter. They are reporting that there's been multiple tests done, and it proves that Alex was at least near the bodies when, or one of the bodies, when they were shot and killed in June.
Let's analyze what Matt Harris, joining us from WLNK, just said. Blood spatter. There's a lot of different kind of blood spatter. There is I drop a jar of ketchup in a glass and it spatters.
Right.
Okay. Then there's what we call high velocity blood spatter. Completely different thing, because high velocity blood spatter, you probably can't even see it with the naked eye. It's like a mist, but it hits, for instance, in this case, his shirt in a different way than other spatter would hit. So let me understand. Matt Harris, a morning show host, Matt and Ramona, WLNK, you're attributing to Fit News the report that a shirt worn by Alex Murdoch, the drugged up lawyer who we now think embezzled literally millions of dollars from his clients.
Mm-hmm.
The shirt worn on the night his wife and son were murdered not only has high velocity blood spatter, a significant amount of high velocity blood spatter.
Is that what you're telling me?
That's what Fitz News is saying. The high velocity impact spatter was specifically high velocity. Now, we know that Alec touched the bodies, at least according to him, in the 911 call that night. So that would be on his shirt and pants maybe as well. But they're saying there is the high velocity impact spatter on that shirt, which puts him right in the proximity of either one or both of the victims when they were shot.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
In the last hours, Alex Murdaugh out of South Carolina's lawyers have piped up, claiming prosecutors are hiding evidence and leaking information about the murders of Murdaugh's wife and son to the press. What evidence are they talking about? Blood spatter evidence. High impact. Human matter spatter, which is probably blood, found on Alex Murdaugh's clothing that he wore the night of the murders. Straight out of Joe Scott Morgan, professor of forensics, Jacksonville State University, author, Blood Beneath My Feet, host of a hit series, Body Bags with Joe Scott Morgan on iHeart. Joe Scott, tell me a lot. It's telling me not only was he about within 36 inches of the bodies of the dead people, his wife and his son, but he was there when they got shot.
Yeah, he was. And that's what's being at least implicated here or implied relative to this finding. When you start to talk about high velocity blood spatter, Nancy, for our listeners at home, just think about this. Right you were when you mentioned that it's very fine, very difficult to see. If anybody has an aerosol hairspray container at home, go to your mirror and spritz it one time very lightly, and it particulates it, and that's generated from a high energy impact, and it's generally associated in most every single time I've seen it is always associated with gunfire. That means that it has to reach a certain level of velocity to impact that body, to spray that blood out. If you're anywhere in proximity to that, and you mentioned about 36 inches, that's kind of the standard, it's going to literally blow out and mystify all
now
over.
Wait a minute. Whoa, 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 whoa. You just ran over 36 inches. We standardize 36 inches. What do we mean by that? When you shoot, the spatter will travel about 36 inches. Past that, it starts to dissolve in the air or drop to the ground, which tells us, and this is after years and years and years of exhaustive experimenting, we know that if you got blood spatter, you are 3 feet or less to the point of impact, bullet to body.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Blood, unlike a bullet, has horrible, horrible aerodynamic qualities. So a bullet can spin through the air and go for a long, long ways. But the way this liquid, very viscous, thick liquid substance, even when it's mystified like this, it doesn't hold together very well. And so after about 36 inches, it's lost its velocity, but it's still particulate like this.
In other words, it goes like this.
Yep. Yep. You're absolutely right. Just like the hairspray I was referring to. So that gives you an indication, Nancy, that if this is true, if what they're saying is true, they would have had to have tested the shirt, looked at it very carefully under, you know, like probably alternative lighting sources like ultraviolet and that sort of thing to be able to pick this up. It'll kind of luminesce and they'll get an idea of the distribution of this pattern as well. And maybe.
What are you saying? The distribution of the pattern?
Well, it'll give you an idea.
Please, for instance, regular people talk.
it will give you an idea, perhaps, relative to his position to the bodies when this weapon was fired, or whoever was wearing the shirt. They have a shirt, pants, whatever the clothing is. When they begin to examine it, and they'll also look at the concentration, Nancy, keep in mind, as you've said many, many times before, you always use the analogy, and I love this, of the water hose, where you spray it, the tighter that grouping, the closer the individual is. So if it's tightly concentrated, that means that the proximity of the individual that's on the receiving end of this spatter, okay, and they're saying it's Alec, that it's going to be very tightly concentrated the closer he is to the body. Further away, it'll be spread out.
36 inches is about an arm's length. That's what we're talking about, which makes perfect sense. You're holding the gun, you shoot, and they're not saying, is it on the chest? Is it on the sleeve of the shirt?
Yeah.
We're talking about timing. Is he caught on video wearing the same shirt or a different shirt? And when can we identify he was wearing the purported bloody shirt the night his wife and son were killed? You know what? Before I go too deep into blood spatter, we're going to revisit. I want you to hear that very night. Now, if this is true, what Fit News is reporting, what we are hearing from our friend Matt Harris, WLNK, if it's true, that means he was at the body at the time of the shooting. That particular blood spatter marking cannot be created in any other way. It's not a transfer where he reached out and hugged the bodies or touched the bodies. It's not a drop, for instance, in Travis Alexander, when he was aspirating blood up from all the stabs in his chest. His lungs were filling up with blood. Travis Alexander goes to his bathroom mirror and looks at himself as he is dying, and blood drips down from the mouth or the nose, and we see drop marks. It's not an orb. It's a spatter. Big difference under a microscope. But wait a minute. If what Fit News is saying, if what Matt Harris is reporting is all correct, then Alex Murdaugh managed to call 911 and say this. Take a listen.
Hampton County 911, what's your emergency?
This is Alec Murdaugh at 4147 Moselle Road. I need the police to answer immediately. My wife and child just got badly.
Okay, you said 4147 Moselle Road in Allison?
Sir?
You said 4147 Moselle Road in Allison?
Yes, sir. 4147 okay. Moselle Road.
Stay on the line with me, okay? Hurry. Yes, sir. Stay on the line with me, okay?
Connor County Communications.
Then I have an Alex Murdaugh on the line, caller from 4147 Moselle Road. He's advising that his wife and child was shot.
Okay, and sir, give me the address again.
It's 4147 Moselle Road. I've been up to it now. It's bad.
Okay. Okay, and are they breathing?
No, ma'am.
Okay, and you said it's your wife and your son?
My wife and my son.
Are they in a vehicle?
No, ma'am. They're on the ground out at my kennel.
You know what? There's just some things in life you just can't get enough of. And hearing Alex Murdaugh, if Fit News is right, and I have no reason to believe they're not right, think about this guy making this 911 call when, according to the blood, and the blood doesn't lie, his shirt is covered in high-velocity blood spatter. Take a listen. Here he is again. He just can't talk enough, can he?
Did you see anyone? Okay. Is he breathing at all?
No, nobody.
Is she? Okay, do you see anything? Do you see anyone in the area?
No, ma'am. No, ma'am.
What color is your house on the outside? What color is your house on the outside?
It's white. You can't see it from the road.
Okay, is it a house or a mobile home?
It's a house.
Okay, and what is your name?
My name is Alec Murdaugh.
Okay, and did you hear anything, or did you come home and find them?
No, man, I've been gone. I just came back.
Okay, and was anyone else supposed to be at your house?
No, ma'am. Please hurry.
We're getting somebody out there to you.
Oh, Bobby Chacon, Bobby Chacon, Bobby Chacon. Nearly 30 years, former FBI agent at BobbyChicone.com. Bobby. Oh, how I would love to be a fly on the wall and watch him make that 911 call. Did you hear all that blubbering and snotting and the tremulous wails?
Yeah, but he became suddenly very literate when he had to say that I just got back.
I heard that. I even wrote that home. I've been gone.
Yeah, he got the things that he needed to get out very clearly and very articulately. And so he knew, it was almost like a script. He knew what he had to say. He obviously knows those calls are recorded. We all do. And so he knew what he had to say. And he walked, if you listen to that call, it's almost like a walkthrough of, hey, I didn't do this. And so it's really interesting to hear that and to hear how he goes from this blubbering guy who's you can hear the snot coming out and you he can't even comport himself, and then all of a sudden he's very clear when he has to make the points that he wants to make.
Murdoch's defense team blasting prosecutors claiming they're hiding evidence, including blood spatter and phone records. I can't wait to read those phone records. And leaking information about the murders to the press. Why is he so concerned about the press? He better be concerned about putting that case together to go to trial. All that matters is what the jury thinks, not what the press thinks or the general population. They're not rendering a verdict.
Take a listen to our friends at GMA. Good Morning America.
The defense has filed a motion asking the judge to compel the state to turn over the evidence immediately and to unseal the details of the grand jury indictment. In a response filing, the state calls the motion a blatant attempt to create drama where formerly there was none, saying the state has no desire to preclude the defense from any discovery, adding they will send it over when the court greenlights it.
What do we know about the facts of the Murdoch murders? I'm going to read something. Listen to this. Matt Harris joining me, morning show host, WLNK. Quote, multiple sources have told Fit that the, and they keep saying this over and over, high velocity impact spatter. And Joe Scott, put that in your head because I need for you to go over that for me. Multiple sources have told this news outlet that the high-velocity impact spatter has been independently analyzed and confirmed by multiple forensic experts, including by at least one out-of-state laboratory. Put that in your head, too, Joe Scott, because I'm just wondering, did they send it to Quantico? Because if you're going to send it out-of-state, why go from South Carolina to Alabama or Georgia or North Carolina? If you're going to send it somewhere, make it count, man. Send it to the feds. I mean, that's what I'm just surmising. Because South Carolina has their own crime lab, don't they, Matt Harris?
Yes, they do.
Probably more than one. I mean, in Georgia, we have a major crime lab in Atlanta. But, I mean, I know South Carolina's got to have their own crime lab.
Oh, they sure do. I mean, they've been backed up a lot because of COVID and what other things are going on. But they have one for sure, if not multiple.
So why would they send it next door to North Carolina or to Tennessee or to Georgia? They wouldn't.
Right. I mean, the feds have been roaming around down in that area for a while now. We know that. And I think that also to avoid any influence by the Murdochs, thus my podcast, Impact of Influence.
I love your podcast.
Thank you. SLED wants to make sure, which is South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, to make sure there's no issues of influence by the Murdochs. So they are going to make sure or ask for the feds' help, I would assume, and not just have one of the counties or state work down there, because they don't want any impropriety acknowledged or thought about or rumored. So getting the feds involved makes sense.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, that's what you name your podcast. And at first, I didn't quite get why you had such a long name for your podcast, but now I do. The Murdoch Family Murders, Impact of Influence. And I thought that meant just how far-reaching the Murdoch family influence was, because they're a legal dynasty. They've been the prosecutors, and they've had a civil law firm, which I think is an incredible conflict of interest, because you're going to represent people that have been victims or perps in the cases that you're prosecuting. I mean, wow. Anyway, that has lasted for decades and decades and decades. But in this case, the title of your podcast goes as well. Impact of Influence. They are sending SLED
South Carolina Law Enforcement Division is sending this evidence out, I think, to the feds, although that's not being reported,
right,
where there is no partiality one way or the other. And nobody's got an axe to grind. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why they did that. And I want to also point out that FIT is reporting that this is just one piece of evidence, of many pieces of evidence, that place Murdoch at the scene at the time of the crime. Bobby Chacon, what could they be talking about?
Other evidence?
Nav system on his car, GPS satellite, sure, on his phone, triangulation.
On his phone, if he has a watch that tracks him, if he's got a fitness tracker, you know, there's a lot of different things to...
You
know.
Here's the problem. You may do all that Fitbit, phone, car, all the nav, all the triangulation, but you got to have the time of death.
Yeah.
Narrow down, because you can prove he's there at 8 p.m., but what if you can't prove the deaths occurred at 8 p.m.? What if the deaths occurred at 2 p.m.? That's a problem.
Yeah, I thought it was weird. We've been saying from the beginning that it was odd to us that they picked a very short period of time for the possible deaths, because they released that Alec made the call at 9:11, and they said the time of death was between 9 and 9:30. Well, that's according to the autopsy report of Paul. That's a very short window, and you guys are better at the science things than me, but that seems like that's unusual to pin it down to a 30-minute span.
Is that what they said, Matt Harris? Is Chacon right? And I think he is. Did they state it was between 9 and 9:30?
The time of, according to the autopsy report of Paul, 9 and 9:30. And
wow.
Alec's call was at 10:07.
Okay, so the call's at 10:07, the death's between 9 and 9:30. Matt Harris and Bobby Chacon, that is certainly food for thought. How did they do it, Joe Scott Morgan? There may be a way that they're doing not scientifically based on the body and the autopsy. It could be Maggie Murdoch, the wife, made a phone call and had a conversation at 8:45.
Yeah, it's coming back to electronics, Nancy. Listen, anybody that's worth their salt in forensics, particularly medical legal death investigation, you don't ever narrow down beyond about a 2 to 3 hour window when you're talking about post-mortem interval. That is the moment in time when an individual died until you actually get a chance to examine the body. We are not fine-tuned enough for that. That gives me an indication here that they're getting information from some other source that's going to pin this down.
Extrinsic evidence to show time of death.
And I remember they did find Maggie's phone the next day, tossed on the side of the road, and some weeds just off the side of the road.
And they've got a really long driveway, and I understand that the phone was not far from the mailbox, or is it on down the road, Matt?
They had to drive to it. In fact, my co-host was talking with Alec's brother, and they said that they got the information from Buster, the brother of Paul, and how to ping Maggie's phone. So they started walking around on the property. They couldn't find it, and then John Marvin got in a car with law enforcement and drove to where the phone was, and they found it.
Wow. That's really valuable information. Hey, guys, all of this that we're learning, for those of you just joining us, according to FIT News, high velocity impact spatter on Alec Murdoch's shirt, the shirt he was wearing the night his wife and son were murdered, high velocity impact blood spatter directly ties him to the double homicide. And with this backdrop about the blood spatter placing him at the bodies at the time they were shot dead, take a listen to him on his 911 call, and then we'll give Dr. Sherry Schwartz a crack at it. Take a listen.
Okay, what is her name?
Maggie and Paul.
Maggie is her name?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
And please hurry.
We're getting somebody out there to you. Me asking you these questions, don't slow them down, okay? And you sure they're not breathing? Is he moving at all, your son? I know you said that she was shot, but what about your son?
Nobody. They're not. Neither one of them's moving.
What is your telephone number? And does anything look out of place?
Ma'am, not particularly, really. No, ma'am.
Okay.
Straight out to Dr. Sherry Schwartz, forensic psychologist specializing in capital mitigation at panthermitigation.com. Dr. Sherry Schwartz, what do you make of it?
Well, I think, you know, going back earlier to what you and Mr. Chacon were talking about, the fact that he sounds so upset in between the questions, but when he has to articulate the answers to the questions, he seems to do that just fine. He even is able to collect himself enough to sort of, I'm imagining him looking around to see if anything's out of place before answering that question. And that to me seems very odd. I don't know what his psychopathology is. I've never met this person, but you know, this seems to be a group of people, the Murdoch family, that has a high degree of comfort being around death, right? The housekeeper, I believe, was killed at one point or died in their presence. And so they don't seem to have a lot of empathy. And yet he seems to do a remarkable job of sounding like he's got this empathy for his apparently deceased loved ones.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Alex Murdoch's lawyers hit the news headlines again, accusing the state of withholding evidence and leaking to the press. Now, this brings to mind when one of Alex Murdoch's lawyers went public and claimed Murdoch had a brain injury, that he had been attacked on the road by an unknown assailant, blah, blah, blah. Well, Murdoch showed up in court with a Band-Aid, as I recall. That's no brain injury, a Band-Aid. He looked fine. So you can't always believe what a lawyer says when a microphone is in front of his face. And regarding that unknown assailant, yeah, that was a lie too. Turns out, according to Murdoch, of course, you know, you got to take that with a box of salt. According to Murdoch, he had a longtime friend, many people say drug supplier, shoot him in the head. So his living son, the only son left living, could get the proceeds of a life insurance policy. I wonder if he didn't have himself shot in the head to make it appear as if the killer of his wife Maggie and son Paul was after him too, distancing himself from their murders. Well, I guess we'll find that out when this finally goes to trial. The defense team making a big bluster about evidence, deadlines, and leaking to the press. But what are the real facts of the case?
Matt Harris joining us from WLNK. At least one of the murder weapons was owned by the Alex Murdoch family.
Well, we know that the Murdochs did own an AR-15 that uses the ammo that was found by the 300 blackout, according to the Wall Street Journal. But that was not recovered or turned over for inspection, is what we're hearing. So that leaves us to believe, if you take every report and put all them together, that maybe the shotgun was found. But that is still, again, one of those rumors that's out there. And the AR-15, according to the journal, that's not the Murdoch owned one was not collected. We're not sure why that was.
Again, the time of the deaths has been placed between 9 and 9:30 that evening. Law enforcement is very clear that that's the window of the murders.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was at the hospital at one point with his dad, who died a few days later. But he was actually at his mom, who suffers from Alzheimer's and dementia, at her house from 9 to 9, in that range, 9 to 9:30, watching a game show or something. And she has the word is that she has a caretaker that was there. at that time to do the vouching. I don't know if it's true, but it's a very short drive from her mom's house. I've driven it from the mom's, his mom's house to the hunting area. I mean, 20 minutes, maybe 15.
Straight back to you, Bobby Chacon. How do you make sense of what you're hearing right now from Matt Harris?
Well, I think, you know, as Dr. Joe even alluded to earlier, I don't think these time frames can be that exact. I think these are approximations. I think both the time of death and these times of travel and the times he left, I think these are very approximations. I mean, if you ask me of my day yesterday, I could give you approximate times of when I did certain things, but those aren't going to be to the minute. Those are going to be plus or minus 5-10 minutes, depending on what I was doing.
Well, not really. If you use your cell phone and your nav data off of your car, it will be down to the minute if that's used. Surveillance video is time is stamped, assuming that it's stamped correctly.
Right, which is why his lawyers are snowing by his own statements and saying he had an airtight alibi when the police are saying, no, he's a suspect in this case, he's a person of interest in this double homicide. Because his statements of when he did certain things may not match up with the electronics that they now have.
I mean, wait, the lawyer is saying this. Jim Griffin, who is Alex Murdaugh's lawyer, is saying, quote, I assure you we have Alex's whereabouts for completely that time. That night, he's sitting on the bedside of his mother at her house when the coroner says the murders happened, watching a game show on TV. How many times have people relied on what's on TV at the time a murder or a crime occurred? That doesn't always pan out the way you think it's going to pan out. Another thing to you, Matt, we also understand that this is now one of the largest and most complex criminal corruption investigations ever in Palmetto State history. This has gone now into corruption. How?
Well, I mean, Alec has been, I think there's 71 charges against him, a little over $8 million that he's alleged to have taken from clients. But the number is estimated by most to be more like 12 or 15 or something. There's a judge that has come under fire because she signed off on the settlement with the Satterfield kids, but it was worded oddly. It seemed to be hidden within the system. So the Beach family,
because
who was
somebody
suing,
stood by and facilitated all of the embezzlement.
Oh, there's got to be. There has to be plenty of people involved, you would think. I don't think over 10 years you can take like $15 million and do it alone.
In the last hours, Alex Murdaugh out of South Carolina's lawyers have piped up, claiming prosecutors are hiding evidence and leaking information about the murders of Murdaugh's wife and son to the press.
Every day that passes makes it more difficult for Alec Murdaugh and his attorneys to get prepared for trial. It's trial by ambush. Give us the stuff. You went to a grand jury and said you got enough evidence to convict Alec Murdaugh, convince a jury beyond a reasonable doubt. Where is it? I don't have a shred of paper. I don't have an email. I don't have an exhibit. I don't have any evidence.
But right now, I want you to hear this. WCIV ABC 4 Charleston reporter Ann Emerson.
Evidence delivered in the Alec Murdaugh murder case. The defense says it's gotten what it wanted after a tense day in court earlier this week. Our investigative reporter Ann Emerson has been on top of this case from day one. So, Ann, do we have any new reaction from Murdaugh's lawyers tonight?
Well, Katie, Alec Murdaugh's defense team says as they download the content of the state's case today, they are evaluating it. In a statement we received, they say they look forward to reviewing the state's materials and allegations immediately so they can, quote, continue to build a defense for our clients so we're ready for trial in less than 6 months. This is the real moment for the defense to discover what they're up against, whether or not there is enough to convict Alec Murdaugh of these double murders. I spoke with South Carolina former Attorney General Charlie Condon. Condon says it will be critical for the defense to decide whether Murdaugh takes a stand. Due to the intense media scrutiny as well as the sensitive nature of the murder evidence, the judge put some of the evidence under a temporary protective order. But according to Condon, that should not hinder either side from evaluating it.
However, as the state prosecutor Creighton Waters said in court Monday, this evidence could fetch millions of dollars if it landed in the wrong hands. This protective order will make sure that if the evidence does get out, the responsible parties will be held accountable and could face jail time.
We are waiting for this to go to trial. And hopefully a true verdict will be rendered. Nancy Grace, Crime Story, signing off. Goodbye, friend.
You're listening to an iHeart podcast.